It's the Burt Cohen Show. The magic of history. What is history? Is it myth-making? Do we learn from history? Someone said the one thing we have learned from history is that we never learn from history. Burt Cohen here. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to talk about history and the future a little bit today. Everybody remembers, well, he's still around, Henry Kissinger. He's on a big book tour right now promoting his new book on China, new 600-page book on American-Chinese relations, in which he polishes, revises, and rationalizes his lengthy and, frankly, rather deadly role in global history. He certainly has celebrity appeal. He's seen as the elder statesman. And his official reign in Washington lasted from 1969 to 1975, largely under Richard Nixon, or I should say perhaps with Richard Nixon. And he's mythologized. He seems like an elder statesman. But recently, there was a gathering in New York at the 92nd Street Y. And inside, he was being interviewed by Leslie Gelb. Outside were some of the people who are guests with us today on the Burt Cohen Show. And I'm very pleased to have with us Joyce Horman, whose husband, Charlie Horman, was the subject of that amazing movie, Missing, which I hope everybody has seen about the CIA-inspired, perhaps directed coup in Chile, which took the life of Salvador Allende on September 11th, 1973. Joyce, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
All right, thank you. And also Deborah Sweet, director of World Can't Wait. You're there as well?
I'm here. Thanks.
Oh, thank you. And Tom Keough. Tom, you are active with Brooklyn for Peace, and you organized the protest against Kissinger when he received, when you received an advertisement about Kissinger's appearance at the well-known 92nd Street Y. Thanks, Tom, for being with
us. Yes.
And I wonder if you could comment. During the event there, it was inside was Leslie Gelb, a respected member of the mainstream media. She said when somebody kind of interrupted and said something about Henry Kissinger, she commented how rude this person was. Why doesn't he just protest outside and let them get on with their discussion? What about this rudeness and the role of civility? I wonder, Tom, we could just perhaps open it up with you on this.
Okay, I think talking about rudeness in front of Henry Kissinger is totally bizarre. I mean, this is a guy who made millions of dollars by doing things like napalming babies, you know, so it's all right to drop napalm on babies and burn them alive and burn everybody in their village and destroy all the farms in Cambodia and kill millions of people and then kill millions of people in Africa when you're finished killing millions of people in Asia. And but you're not supposed to be rude or impolite to this guy.
Right.
I mean, he should be in prison. He should be in prison for more crimes than you could ever count. And just from what we know of the public crimes, I mean, I got this advertisement in the mail on April 30th, and people were calling up, and I was looking on Google, and this guy was busy, 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 busy. I mean, doesn't make the newspapers like he did when he was Secretary of State, but at the present time, he's a Department of Defense advisor for the illegal, immoral war in Iraq. He's been hired in October by Secretary of State Clinton to advise the State Department presently, and there was many websites that said as of the middle of March, he'd become a political advisor for Pope Benedict. So he's still receiving three really big, gigantic paychecks for doing what he does, and he basically single-handedly started the civil war in Angola because he's an extreme racist who didn't want Africans to be running an African country. He was upset when the European colonialists moved out of different parts of Africa. He was a big racist supporter of the African South African apartheid regime, and then people would tell me about how he orchestrated the horrors in Cyprus, where 1.5 million people disappeared and were never heard from again. And then somebody would tell us about how he would hang out with Baby Doc and Papa Doc in
Haiti,
country that, a hellish dictatorship. And he seems to have been with all the worst bad guys in the last 60 years, and he's killed millions and millions and millions of human beings. I first learned about Kissinger when I was in junior high school. The junior high school principal was a Jewish woman who had been through the concentration camps. Her and her mother survived. The rest of her family did not. And she used to talk about how it was horrible that the Germans killed 6 million Jews, but Kissinger killed millions and millions and millions of Vietnamese and Cambodians, so that doesn't count. You know, I mean, it's like we're supposed to be patriotic about that and never be impolite. The absurdity is painful.
Well, it is. It is kind of amazing, really. I think most people really don't know who Henry Kissinger is, what he has been, and Tom, I think you were clearly correct that he's been pretty much on the side of white settlers of the 20th century in virtually every situation. He's some kind of a belief in, I suppose, some sort of right of Western so-called civilization to dominate and control. We've seen that from Vietnam to Bangladesh, as you were saying, Africa. And these aren't just stories that people tell that may be flights of fantasy by, you know, conspiracy theorists. All this stuff is clearly documented. And Joyce Horman, you certainly are aware of.
But the people at the 92nd Street Y kept acting like it was not documented. They kept, when I spoke to the supervisors at the 92nd Street Y, and I mentioned things like Cambodia, they said, well, that's just your opinion. I said, you know, I talked about Cambodia, the overthrow of the government in Chile. They said, oh, that's just your opinion. Well,
you know, my experience is a very personal one with Kissinger, and it does have to do with Chile. And I refer to a book written by one of my favorite people, Peter Kornbluh, The Pinochet File. And this has to do with secret testimony about Chile and the government, U.S. government's intentions there, and the CIA operations that were conducted. The agency activities in Chile, Colby indicated, according to a summary of his testimony, were viewed as a prototype or laboratory experiment to test the techniques of heavy financial investment in efforts to discredit and bring down a government. To discredit and bring down a government. They forget to say that it was a democratically elected government.
Right.
Kissinger and Helms and the CIA attempted to undermine democratically elected Allende and went on to grossly deceive Congress during the ITT-CIA hearings the year before. There is a summary that that Harrington wrote, and it landed on Levinson's desk in a report to Senator Church that investigated assassinations planned by the U.S. government. And it says, the Nixon administration authorized more than $8 million for covert activities by the agency in Chile between 70 and 73 in an effort to make it impossible for President Salvador Allende Gossens to govern, and that all these activities were specifically authorized by the 40 Committee, the interdepartmental group chaired by Secretary of State Kissinger, which authorized CIA clandestine activities. The goal of the clandestine activities was to destabilize the Allende government. It was considered a test of using heavy cash payments to bring down a government viewed as antagonistic to the U.S. And there's just a couple of quotes. The one that is particularly strong and repeated all the time of Kissinger is, "I don't see why we need to stand by and watch a country go communist due to the irresponsibility of its own people."
Right.
The issues are much too important for the Chilean voters to be left to decide for themselves. This man and these acts in Chile are clearly anti-democratic and criminal, you know, and for New Yorkers especially, but all of the United States people, citizens, to understand how much wrong has been done in the U.S. name by Henry Kissinger. New Yorkers, I always consider to be a little, you know, a little more on top of things sometimes, and yet this presentation at the 92nd Street Y really stunned me, and I'm really quite grateful to Tom for having the vision to say that should be protested, because it certainly should be, should have been. Kissinger also said, "We didn't do it. I mean, we helped them and created the conditions as great as possible." And this was when he was conversing with President Nixon about the coup. Now, my husband was killed in this coup, and the violence perpetrated by Pinochet for 17 years was basically looked away from by the U.S. government, led by, of course, the start of it, which was the worst part, was Nixon and Kissinger looking away. Kissinger did not help protect Americans, as far as I can, at least not anybody he thought might be not completely with them, you know, in terms of
dominance.
We
yes.
supported Allende. We thought it was a wonderful nationalistic and inspirational government that Allende was leading. Everyone in Chile was very excited about it, except those intent on overthrowing him. And the fact that Kissinger did not say anything about the Americans who were assassinated right after the coup, Frank Tarucci and my husband Charles Warman, had to do a lot with deceiving Congress and not letting them understand the kind of violence that was being levied against so many people. And this you know, heavy lid of secrecy just kept on going. That was one of the wonderful things about the movie Missing. It brought to U.S. consciousness the incredible wrongs that had been inflicted on Chile by the use of influence by the United States and policies of Kissinger and Nixon. So these are, and I'm just going to, you know, say one more thing.
Sure.
And that's in respect of people who do look at history and do research. Kornbluh's persistent investigation and scrutiny succeeded in uncovering much of the facts that the Nixon-Kissinger administration worked so hard and so long to suppress. I'm quoting myself on this. "We who lost loved ones to this chapter of undemocratic, covert, and vicious behavior of U.S. government officials owe Kornbluh more than our respect and admiration. We also owe him a deep debt of gratitude for giving us the peace of mind that comes with knowing more of the truth than they ever wanted us to know. But this truth must, we must keep bringing this up, and we must prevent the United States populace from forgetting the evils that Kissinger has propagated and fomented throughout the world."
Now, what happens if he is allowed to age gracefully and is never prosecuted? So what then? I mean, why is it important that we do this? And I do want to get into, you know, as you mentioned, Joyce, in particular, some real specifics about what he did. You know, if it's opinion, if it's not right, well, have a trial and find out what is the truth. But what happens, you know, what's the big deal if he's
there
not?
There are some governments, you know, that actually would arrest Kissinger if he sets foot on their ground. And I think that the only thing that would be appropriate for trying Henry Kissinger would be an international judicial tribunal, such as the kind we see, you know, for other
sure.
human rights criminals.
Well, Judge I was going to say in Spain. I spoke recently with Judge Balthazar Garzon, who successfully prosecuted Pinochet, the guy who...
Aren't we grateful for that? What a victory that was for all of us. And it did frighten Henry Kissinger that, in fact, that just that kind of thing might roll out towards him.
Yes.
Because, of course, he was fomenting just the kinds of crimes that were... Pinochet was being tried for.
Yep, and Judge Garzon said he very much would like to prosecute Kissinger. And I understand there are international arrest warrants for Kissinger from not just Spain, but from France as well for crimes during the assault on Chile. We are talking about, Henry Kissinger, who's on a grandiose book tour right now, promoting his new book and his wonderful role in history and he's still seen by most Americans as a senior statesman. And again, what happens? What's the harm to the United States and to the world, really, if Kissinger is allowed to just age gracefully? Somebody pick up on that.
I could take a stab at
Deborah.
That
yes.
This is Deborah Sweet.
Thank you. From World Can't Wait.
World Can't Wait.
Yep.
Has a project that we began when we failed to drive out the Bush regime and reverse its whole program. We began looking at the war criminals who were populated the Bush regime. And we have a project now that protests and exposes and challenges them on campuses and whenever they speak around the world. And, you know, they're extremely active. I'm talking about Cheney to some extent, not so much George Bush, but Condi Rice, Donald Rumsfeld, John Yoo, the torture lawyers who are sitting on judicial benches and teaching on campuses around the country. That would be former Attorney General Gonzalez and so forth. And we've really chosen to concentrate on the Bush war criminals because this is very fresh and very much became a symbol for the world of a U.S. foreign policy run amok and destroying people around the globe in our names. When Tom came up with the idea and the very appropriate response that Henry Kissinger ought to be protested when he appears in public in New York, I also thought that was just the right thing to do because, as you're mentioning history and humanity, if these war criminals like Pinochet all but got away with it.
Yes.
He was very old. Kissinger is very old. But it's actually never too late to pursue justice in the name of the victim. Of these crimes, which would be directly the people who were killed, mutilated, their lives ended in these wars, their families, their societies, their communities, and then ultimately all of humanity. The United States, who, by the way, is not a participant in the International Criminal Court, and why? Because they're worried about U.S. officials being tried under these sorts of mass human rights violations. They've never signed on to it. But when you talk about bringing people to The Hague for human rights violations, the United States is often very interested in doing it when it's someone from a government that the United States has opposed. But when it's someone in the whole orbit of governments that the United States has traditionally supported, they're really not interested in doing that, and that's the situation with Kissinger. This is not a matter of opinion.
Right.
We have a trove of records of writing, speeches, and taped conversations when Henry Kissinger was in the White House from 1969 to 1975. I'm going to put a whole list of links on my blog today, deborah.worldcantwait.net, and this will be a way that listeners can go directly to the horse's mouth, as it were,
mm-hmm.
hear what he was talking about in terms of Chile and Vietnam in particular. I'd love to read some of that if we have time.
Oh, sure. There is time. And I wanted to mention that you were talking about, you know, the age of the guy. He's, I'm not sure, what, 80 or so. But it seems to me this fellow, I'm not sure if I pronounce it right, Demjanjuk, who was just prosecuted, he's quite elderly, but he was a guard at the some of the concentration camps, the death camps in Germany. And he was prosecuted, and we thought it was the right thing to do. And there was a wonderful quote, I don't have it in front of me, from one of the judges at the Nuremberg trials, how this can't just apply to the defeated Germany. This has, this meaning the prosecution of the war criminals at the Nuremberg trials, has to apply throughout the world for it to have any meaning. Deborah, why don't you go on with what you were about to cite as some evidence?
Well, just, you know, my generation is the Vietnam generation. And
that's me.
While we were out protesting the wars in Vietnam, and certainly by 1969, the whole world knew this was an illegitimate war.
Yes.
This was the U.S. carrying on what the French had failed to do in pacifying a genuine national liberation movement in Vietnam. It was the U.S. determining that there was going to be North Vietnam and South Vietnam. That did not come from the people of Vietnam.
Correct.
This was a colonial imposition. And by the time Henry Kissinger and Nixon, you know, here's Henry Kissinger sitting at the right arm of Nixon, and I say right arm because, you know, in many cases in these conversations, he appears to be coming at things from the right of Richard Nixon, if you can believe that.
Well, sure.
But Kissinger and Nixon are smiling to the world. Oh, we're negotiating.
Yeah.
We've come into office in order to put an end to this war, and we're going to go to the peace table and negotiate it. In the meantime, their major form of negotiation was bombing the hell out of the people of Vietnam, especially North Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of material in the archives on Operation Duck Hook, with Kissinger writing that the main thing that Nixon had to confront was going to be the use of tactical nuclear weapons. And he says, the president would need to decide in advance the fateful question of how far we will go. He cannot, for example, confront the issue of using tactical nuclear weapons in the midst of the exercise. He must be prepared to play out whatever string necessary in this case. And we know that while the Vietnam moratorium in October 15, 1969, there was a 500,000 of us at least massed outside of the White House.
Yes.
Here were Nixon and Kissinger that weekend actually discussing the option, not the horror, but the option of using nuclear weapons on the people of North Vietnam. And all along, Kissinger is arguing. I've got some of his language here. He's arguing, we've got to be brutal. This has to be an operation that has to be brutal and sustainable. We've got to go in with a great deal of determination. Here's Nixon saying, you know, look, Johnson bombed them for years, and it didn't do any good. This is the period when Johnson was bombing from 65 to 68,
mm-hmm.
And Kissinger says to him, but Mr. President, Johnson never had a strategy. He was sort of picking away at them. He would go in with 50 planes, 20 planes. I bet you we will have had more planes over there in one day than Johnson had a month. Nixon says, really? Kissinger says, yeah. You know, they're going to go in and bomb the dikes, bomb the civilian infrastructure, which they did.
Yes.
And when Tom opened this conversation saying that Nixon killed millions of people, the blood of at least 2 million Vietnamese is on the hands of Kissinger, Nixon, and this whole army of generals who for years and years pursued this war with the aim of driving Vietnam back into the Stone Age,
yes,
if that was necessary to control it. And that right there is enough of a case to take Henry Kissinger to the Hague.
Well, I'm sure Henry Kissinger knows this is a very good case. Many years ago, read William Shawcross's amazing book called Sideshow, talking about Cambodia.
It's a great book.
It's an amazing
book. It's a
book.
Great book.
And one thing I got from that, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the military personnel presented Kissinger with three options, one of which was so crazy, criminally insane, basically, that would be just, you know, they put it out there on the table to say, well, we could do this, but this is completely unrealistic. This was the view of the military people. But what that plan was basically the carpet bombing, massive B-52 bombing of undefended areas of Cambodia, which had been a neutral country. And that madness scheme is exactly what Henry Kissinger did, total carpet bombing. And Shawcross's book, Sideshow, did not blame Kissinger and the U.S. for the Cambodian genocide, which followed later under Pol Pot, but for creating the conditions of in which the Khmer Rouge were able to come to power, because the people were so terrified. I mean, this so-called primitive people, I hate to use that term, but, you know, in terms of defenses, they had virtually nothing, and they were a neutral country, and Kissinger personally directed an absolute terror bombing. You talk about terrorism of the people of Cambodia, which kind of created the conditions for something like, I mean, he set the level of madness and death and destruction so that it almost legitimized it there. And this can all be documented. If you're just tuning in to the Bert Cohen Show, we're talking about the possible indictment, why Henry Kissinger should be indicted, why there's lots of places in the world where he cannot dare travel. We're talking with Deborah Sweet, director of World Can't Wait, Joyce Horman, whose husband Charles Horman was killed in the military coup in 1973, directed by Henry Kissinger, Tom Keogh, who helped organize the recent protest against Kissinger. Why is it? I'm curious, why is it that Americans don't want to look at the real Henry Kissinger, that they don't want rudeness? What is it about this? Why don't they want to see it? Why do they want to sweep it under the rug so much? And I'll turn this out to any one of you.
Well, I think there's a whole sort of aura of elder statement that gets projected by certain media campaigns for Henry Kissinger. And the fact that current government people ask for his advice really burns.
Oh my goodness, yes.
But,
I know.
It's this kind of lack of appreciation for history and lack of appreciation for the absolute horror that he promoted with his policies and continues to promote with his consultations. And now he, you know, I think if I just brushed by the NPR interview with him, but he seems to be promoting himself as a human rights advocate at this point, and reminding people that he had to leave Germany and some of his family members were killed. The idea that he can wash away all of his crimes with this sort of preposterousness, elder statesman notion, is something that we, I think, all have to fight to put the history back into this whole picture of Henry. And that would give more Americans more fuel for actually understanding why other countries want to put him on trial, and that maybe we should be considering putting him on trial as well.
I wonder what the world would think of us if we put him on trial.
I beg your pardon?
I wonder what the world might think of us if the United States, what the effects would be if we indeed put him on trial for crimes against humanity, for war crimes.
The idea of the U.S. government putting Henry Kissinger on trial would be such a dramatic departure.
Yes.
From everything the current administration is pursuing.
Yeah.
I think everyone would be stunned. And I'm not saying it'll never happen, but it would take what Joyce is talking about and you're asking about, Bert. That would be a very significant section of people living here in this country beginning to take responsibility for what our government is doing and has done. Because if you were to indict and prosecute Kissinger, you'd have to look all the way forward you'd have to look at what the Bush administration did. It is almost impossible to name all the things that they began, but two of them were pursuing completely illegitimate, immoral, and unjust occupations that are still going on. Iraq continues under the current president, Barack Obama. Afghanistan has been dramatically expanded as a war of occupation.
Yes. And
can I just say there's two problems?
Go right ahead.
I mean, there's several other problems, but there's two big ones that I see. Is one is the problem of the way the media and the textbook industry writes history, and the other is the problem of just the greed of investors and the blindness of investors. I mean, this event was billed as a celebration of the 40th anniversary of Kissinger and Nixon opening up China to the West. Now, what that means in today's world for the average American is that many, many factories from countries like the United States laid off all their workers, packed up their equipment, and shipped it to China.
Right.
And sometimes that was done, you know, subsidized by the IRS tax dollars we pay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this, for the investment crowd, for the Wall Street guys, they're celebrating this. They're celebrating a major accomplishment he did. He took millions of factory workers in the United States that were making $8.25 an hour, and he replaced them with people that are making 20 cents an hour. And they think that's a wonderful thing. Now, on the other hand, one problem is with the history books. My son recently completed public high school in New York City. When he was in junior high school, parents complained that they had no history books in the public junior high school.
Hmm.
And at a meeting, the history teacher said, well, yeah, we just can't find one that's acceptable to us. And they showed us the history books, and it's nothing like a history book I saw when I was in school. My son's high school history book is called United States in the 20th Century. The last chapter has an advertisement on the top of each page saying it's sponsored by USA Today, and it talks about how George Bush is the greatest leader the world has ever seen. In this book, United States and the 20th Century, there is nothing that I would define as important to the United States in the 20th Century that's in there. There is no mention of the Cold War. There is no mention of an arms race. There is almost no mention of problems of any kind. Liza Minnelli has a quarter-page article. There is a quarter-page article on Fred Astaire. Elvis gets half a page. The Korean War gets two sentences. There's no talk, you know, the traditional history book talk about what happened in the 1930s. We had a big depression, and then there was the rise of fascism. No. It's, you know, the movie industry. Mahalia Jackson gets more space than any other African-American, and they say she was a great civil rights leader because she sang songs to the Lord. All right, but I think, you know, Dr. King, Rosa Parks, a whole long list of
Malcolm
people
X, sure,
should have got more ink. You know, our news media is filled with stories of celebrities.
I think you raise.
You don't see the news about Iraq, Afghanistan, Haiti. I mean,
we've become so celebrity focused, and I think, Tom, you're calling up a essential question here: is who owns history? What is who decides what gets in the history books? You see on the news today. I mean, what is history but old news? And the news today is just like celebrity, celebrity, celebrity. We don't want to look at the real issues. And what does that do to us as a country? And what does that do to other people around the world that are affected by American policy? We just look at, I mean, if Sarah Palin weren't such a celebrity and people actually looked at, you know, what she's saying, it just wouldn't.
Well, it's telling people around the world not affected by Wall Street policy.
Yes.
You are not affected by policy coming out of Washington. I mean, basically, it's U.S. history with no problems and nobody working to make any solutions. I mean, when I was a kid, the history books routinely had stories about racial problems or labor unions forming because of sweatshop conditions.
Yep.
But that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, the people, I guess, want to.
I just wanted to say that there's another really serious problem, and that is Henry Kissinger is still a very powerful person. And people who are embedded in power are very difficult to bring to justice. They have, you know, it took taking Pinochet out of Chile for a Spanish judge to actually arrest him in England. The idea that Kissinger won't actually go to some countries is because he would be vulnerable there. But here in the United States, he is associated with so much power. It is very difficult to bring this history to so many people's attention, to the number of people's attention it would require to actually demand that he be put on trial.
I think partially that's why he stays out of the media. I mean, when he was, you know, back in the 70s and the 60s, he wanted to be in the newspaper every day, and he was. But I think he's starting to realize, you know, he has to be more secretive about the horrible things he does. So he goes around pretending he's a human rights advocate. He had to sneak into the 92nd Street Y. He didn't just walk in the front door like anybody else. He has some level of embarrassment, obviously. But
well, there's something about in Nuremberg, you know, the Germans, thank God, were defeated. The Nazis were defeated. And so the world could prosecute them now because they were defeated. There were prosecutions against the Confederacy because they lost. But the victors, there's rarely any prosecutions. But then again, in Vietnam, well, we were not the victors. The people of Vietnam actually claimed their country from France and then successfully from the Americans as well. I wonder if Henry Kissinger might face some problems in Vietnam, although now Vietnam seems to be like, you know, China, where a lot of our jobs have gone over there and people working in sweatshops. And it's great for the business community, but not so good for the American worker. There was a movie which no doubt probably most, if not all three of you have seen, The Trials of Henry Kissinger. And one of the things that amazed me about that, I thought I knew how bad this guy was. I did not know that at the election of 1968, there were peace talks going on before Nixon was elected. And it was Henry Kissinger who intervened with the president of our puppet, South Vietnam, and said, no, don't go to the negotiations now. Wait till Nixon comes in. You'll get a better deal. So there could have been peace back then with the 10-point peace plan put out by the National Liberation Front, which would have actually been more advantageous to the United States than was the final result at the end of the war on April 30th, 1975. So thousands of people died and lost limbs because of Henry Kissinger. People don't...
Political strategy,
yes, that's what it was.
And they don't care about the average Americans. No. They don't care about the guys who are getting drafted. I mean, they don't care.
And the people
if you die or Ms. Horman's husband gets murdered, they have no conscience about this kind of thing. We have to keep that fact in front of us at all times, you know.
I thought it was very interesting that we all know, well, a lot of us who are around at the time anyway, of course, know about the My Lai massacre, in which, oh my goodness, what a horrible thing. And it was indeed horrible what happened there with the villagers being massacred. And Lieutenant Kelly and Captain Medina were singled out as the bad apples. Now, I wonder, and that was how it was played. Oh no, this just happened once. This was a bizarre aberration. Was the policy of Vietnam actually, of Americans in Vietnam actually create the conditions for that? And I wonder if Kissinger had anything to do with that kind of policy of, you know, racist, basically genocide against the people of Vietnam.
Well, I don't know, Bert, exactly what role Kissinger was playing at that point. By the time he came into the White House, it was well established for at least 8 years. And we know this now from the Pentagon Papers, that the warfighting strategy of the U.S. military, the Marines, and the Army in Vietnam was on many levels take no prisoners. It was strategic Hamlet program, which involved torture. All of these debates that have gone on in the last 10 years over torture actually were prefigured in what the U.S. was doing in Vietnam towards the civilian population. This was really well established, and one of the things people don't know enough about My Lai was As horrible as that was, if you look at the testimony of Vietnam veterans at the time,
yes,
in 1973 at the Winter Soldier investigation, it was business as usual.
Yes.
It's a parallel now with the guys coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan who are saying, yeah, you look at that collateral murder video that WikiLeaks put up from the U.S. Apache helicopter attack on 12 Iraqi civilians in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And they find it unimpressive, actually, because they said this type of thing went on. And your point, Bert, about who did time for the My Lai massacre is a story we keep seeing repeated. Did the guys on the ground think this stuff up? Well, maybe some of them were came into the military. They were already sadistic. But essentially, the main dynamic here is they were trained. They were trained in the systematic abuse of civilians as a way of demoralizing the other side. And they were trained in torture methods. And all of this was led through their command structure. Somebody knew about this and was giving the orders. And I think the reason we're so exercised, all of us, over Henry Kissinger is, here he was at the top of the military structure as the national security advisor to the president and the secretary of state, leading a military campaign under the cover of, you know, yes, diplomacy, but essentially a war and a military campaign that did all of these things in the process of carrying out the war and is therefore ultimately much more responsible than Cali or Medina or any of the Afghan kill team, for instance, that's just now being prosecuted for openly killing Afghan civilians.
And I noticed that Ratko Mladic is now being put on trial at the World Court in The Hague. And I wonder if it's because, I don't know, if his side was defeated there. There must be some comparisons, I would think. Wouldn't the same... I'm not even sure what Ratko Mladic is charged with. I assume, oh yes, it was the slaughter of the 8,000 at Srebrenica, if I pronounced that right. And
uh-huh.
I wonder if there are, I think, appropriate comparisons to this nice guy, this senior statesman, Henry Kissinger. Comments, please.
There must be many. I'm just trying to think of one specific clear one. There were other policies, too, that he put into effect, like extraordinary rendition, the Operation Condor in Latin America after Chile was hustling people back and forth, and the idea that you would kidnap and transport people to another country so they could be tortured more easily with less risk to the torturers is so wrong.
And that was Henry
would
Kissinger?
Normally, I think, be it protested by most Americans, and yet this has become more common to talk about as the only way to get information, and that's another virulent thought in our society today, is that torture is somehow justifiable.
Mm. So Henry Kissinger put that into play. Wonderful. And we're paying the price for it now. And if you just tuned in, Bert Cohen here. We're talking with Deborah Sweet, Joyce Harmon, and Tom Keogh, who made some noise about the visit of Henry Kissinger on his book tour, promoting himself. And it's been suggested that, well, perhaps he ought to be arrested and prosecuted. And quite a while ago, I had on the show Buscaglia, I can't think of his first name. Vincent Buscaglia, the guy who prosecuted mass murderer Charlie Manson. He was the L.A. County prosecutor, and he has a book called "The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder." And he was suggesting that any place in the United States where somebody had been killed in Iraq, that county prosecutor could have a case to go after George W. Bush. I wonder, an awful lot of people died in Vietnam. I wonder if it's possible from a putting somebody on trial and prosecuting somebody, if any place in the United States might also have grounds for arresting and prosecuting Henry Kissinger on that, and that if the word got out there that they could in fact do that, I mean, these guys got away with it. Lyndon Johnson died without being put on trial. Nixon died without being put on trial. Here's Henry Kissinger. I wonder if it might be possible for county prosecutors who might find somebody whose family is kind of angry that they lost a family member who could possibly put Henry Kissinger on trial.
Well, we actually had a case against Kissinger and other members of the State Department in the 70s. The Center for Constitutional Rights launched that against Henry, and part of the problem was the documents were all secret, and they were all redacted, and it was very hard to get to them. It wasn't actually until the Clinton administration declassified some of the documents that we were able to see one that says there is some circumstantial evidence just U.S. intelligence may have played an unfortunate part in Horman's death. At best, it was limited to providing and confirming information that helped motivate his murder by the government of Chile. At worst, U.S. intelligence was aware the government of Chile saw Horman in a rather serious light, and U.S. officials did nothing to discourage the logical outcome of the Chilean government's paranoia. Now, the problem is, there are also laws that are recently put in place to protect government authorities from suit by individuals. And if you don't have a smoking pistol, it becomes very, very difficult to not injure yourself when you go in and charge government officials with some of these crimes. So there is more that has to be accomplished, and yet it would be very interesting if a lot of individuals did have enough information to launch several suits against Kissinger and against some of the higher members of the administrations that inflicted these crimes on so many people. Maybe if many of them launched at the same time, it could start people thinking, in the right direction of prosecution.
Well, it does seem
that's a good point, Joyce. That part of what we're running up into, for instance, the Guantanamo detainees, the great majority of them who've actually been cleared for release, even the ones that are still there by the U.S., have virtually, for the most part, been unable to get a hearing in U.S. courts. And usually, certainly the Bush administration argued, and now the Obama administration is saying the same thing, their case can't be heard in U.S. courts because of what? National security requirements.
Oh, my.
It would be a...
Can I say a couple things quick?
Yeah.
Some of the people were released because they were sued by governments of other countries like Canada and Germany, and the governments of Canada and Germany did stand up for some of their citizens and went to court, and people were released. So there's hope in other countries where things are more civilized. But this also reminds me, I was getting some emails about 6 months ago. The United States Congress is trying to make a lot of changes, very dramatic changes to the way Americans live, and they're trying to make it much harder to put officials in on trial. They're trying to make there's people in the House and the Senate, but they're trying to make it very, very difficult to sue corporations, for example. And there's people trying to make it so class action suits are no longer something you can do in the United States. So people have to keep vigilant and active and keep an eye on all the many problems coming out of Congress. But those are a couple of things that are really troublesome and going to make it more difficult to see justice.
Well, I wonder if Kissinger...
we have a lot of problems here.
Yeah.
And I think a big mass movement of public opinion could solve many of them. But part of, the U.S. is always quite proud of its role in Nuremberg. Well, that was the winners putting the losers on trial. It's very hard through this judicial system and this setup that we have to put the victors on trial. And unfortunately, the example of Vietnam, I believe the U.S. was utterly defeated in Vietnam.
Oh, absolutely.
But in the certain longer-term perspective, you could say that the system that Henry Kissinger has spent his whole life running for was successful. I mean, Tom's point about capitalism, imperialism has deeply penetrated Vietnam, yes, and that whole idea of national liberation and having a country that could stand up independently and determine its own direction was smashed through other means than a war. So in a certain sense, they won, and I think that's why it's so difficult now to bring these people to justice.
Yeah, I do find it fascinating that, you know, here's Vietnam and China becoming, you know, pretty capitalist, and, you know, had we done that without all the mass killing, might have saved a lot of lives, and they would have ended up in our, you know, Western sphere anyway. And I think it's fascinating, too, now about this much ballyhoo about Obama making war in Libya without congressional approval. I don't remember hearing that same noise about Kissinger when he so clearly violated the U.S. Constitution and not consulting with Congress by secretly bombing Cambodia and Laos without the authorization of Congress. And I just, but before
well,
we get...
Well, people did try to bring that up during the Watergate hearings. There was proposals to, you know, when they made a certain number of charges against Nixon for impeachment. There were members of Congress and a big vast movement of the public that wanted the secret, you know, the bombing of Cambodia to be one of the additional reasons why he was impeached, and the extension of the Vietnam War. That's but the majority of congressmen squelched that idea.
Yeah, CYA.
People did try. There was a serious effort.
Yeah, because they a lot of them had voted for it as well. And I want to World Can't Wait, and a lot of you guys are also participating in calling attention to Bradley Manning, who, you know, it seems to fit in here. You know, there's this cult of secrecy. We've institutionalized secrecy now to lengths I never would have dreamed of, that, you know, protecting the people who make these awful decisions, who carry out these awful policies, from any consequences. And yet here we have Bradley Manning. I'm not sure if he's even charged with anything, but he's being regarded as a true enemy of the United States. And he's simply, you know, allegedly anyway, telling the truth. There was a rally on June 4th, and I'm not sure who this quote is from. The information that Bradley Manning is accused of releasing should have been in the public domain. And it just seems so topsy-turvy that we're protecting and not, that we should be protecting and not prosecuting whistleblowers. And you know, when they tell the truth, they're being called anti-American. And yet the harm that Kissinger has done to so many millions of people, the lives he's taken, as well as to the reputation of the United States, it just, people have to be made aware of this. And you guys are all participating in trying to put this in perspective and do something about it. So what can people do, A, about Bradley Manning, and B, supposing Henry Kissinger comes to your town on part of the book tour?
Open your mouth, right? I can't speak for Joyce and Tom on the call, but this is Deborah, and I have been working on the Brad Manning case for over a year. He has very serious charges against him. He's a 23-year-old Army private. He worked in intelligence in Iraq. He's being charged with releasing documents through WikiLeaks that did detail some of the tremendous abuses of U.S. military towards civilians in Iraq and Afghanistan, and diplomatic cables that go back more than a decade about how the U.S. has maintained its power relationships. He's in very serious trouble. He is being charged with what could be a capital crime if the U.S. decides to ask for the death penalty. They're saying they're just asking for life in prison. Nobody knows what he did or didn't do, but our stand in World Can't Wait has been that whoever is responsible for releasing this information so that worldwide the public could know what the U.S. has been doing are heroic, and Bradley Manning should be freed.
And
so there's plenty of information on World Can't Wait's website about that. And our project, War Criminals Watch, will also have links to what Joyce and Tom have been working on and Henry Kissinger, as well as the current Bush torture criminal.
Yes, indeed. Well, thank you all very much for being with us. It's a fascinating subject, and don't buy books by crooks, an old saying goes. And if people want more information, World Can't Wait and War Criminals Watch, are those two sites? Is that it?
Did I get yes.
That?
I got and thanks to the other guests, I learned a great deal from both of you. And it's always worth opening your mouth because people will listen.
That's true. And Joyce Horman, thank you very much for being with us and for carrying on the crusade all these many decades.
Thank you, Bert and Deborah and Tom. I appreciate it.
All right, and thanks,
Tom. Thank you. And if Kissinger comes to your bookstore, contact warcriminalswatch.com.
Yeah, and we'll have materials for you. And thanks most of all to Tom for insisting that Kissinger must be protested and for Bert for inviting us.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, thank you all, and we'll keep at it.
Okay.
And perhaps we'll have some policy change in the future.